Morning. May it please the Court, I'm Kevin McShane from Indianapolis. The sole issue before the Court in this criminal appeal is whether the trial court erred in overruling Mr. Walker's motion to suppress. That motion and his appeal is based on two different propositions. One is a lack of probable cause existing for the warrant to issue in this case, and secondly, that the information contained in the search warrant affidavit prepared by the lead agent in this case was stale.
You know, it seems to me on the probable cause point, even putting aside that lengthy portion of the affidavit talking about how common it is for evidence to be in people's homes, this warrant was looking for, among other things, records. And we did know that this man's cell phone was registered to that address. We did have from the wiretaps evidence that he was involved with this methamphetamine conspiracy, if you will, the business. And people are likely to have phone records in the place reflected on the phone bill. That could, government often uses telephone records to try to prove these kinds of conspiracies. So just from that even single point of view, it seems to me that there was reason to go to the house. I mean, I understand that your main point is, you know, this is not an arrest warrant, it's a search warrant for particular premises. We've got a link to the premises.
I think it would be a fair inference for both the affiant, the agent, and also the issuing magistrate to find that there may be cell phone records in a residence that is the subscribed to residence on the cell phone. But I think, Your Honor, you're getting into a question of mere evidence, M-E-R-E, as opposed to contraband. And obviously, mere evidence can be the subject of a search warrant.
Well,
in certain
once they're legitimately in the house, though, it is certainly true that they find the methamphetamine, but that's a slightly different point. I don't know, for example, whether it was in plain view or whether it was not in plain view. Once they're legitimately in the house, because the search warrant has entitled them to go search for the documents and the other kinds of materials mentioned in the warrant, they're in the house. And there are doctrines under which seizures of other items could be justified.
Sure, during the course of an otherwise legitimate search.
During the course of an otherwise legitimate search.
I agree with that. I would point out that issue was not raised.
Well, I know. That's what I'm saying. I know nothing about why they happened, whether methamphetamine was sitting in the middle of the table.
In this case. But
I don't know that. But the fact is, you're saying they shouldn't have even walked through the door of the house.
Absolutely.
Because the affidavit was bad, and I'm questioning that.
If I could compare cell phone records, which these days would commonly be found in the homes of a large percentage of the citizens in this country, it would be like this, saying we can get a warrant because people in the drug business use spoons to cook up their methamphetamine, and there's probably spoons in this house.
Now, well, if you thought there were spoons with residue, but I'm saying cell phone records will tell you who was being called, actually incoming calls, outgoing calls, as the government puts it, I mean, the warrant was searched, was issued for documents and records, firearms, drug paraphernalia, currency, and other evidence associated with the trafficking activity. And so I'm focusing on the documents and records part of this and the fact that there's a link to this address.
Well, if that's all there is, and I think that's a fair point, and as I said, I think it would be fair to assume there would probably be records there. I do not recall that there were cell phone records actually seized.
But that's not the standard.
I know it's not. But just as the fact that there were drugs there isn't the standard either. I think the court needs to make this decision, as the law tells us, based on all the circumstances in this particular case. This conspiracy started in December of 2002. Mr. Walker does not appear until the middle of August 2003. It's fair to say he comes in at the end. Of course, that doesn't necessarily relieve him from culpability, nor does it make him immune from search. But when you're talking about that continuity of criminal activity here, I think it's an important point. He comes in late. He's on about five or six phone calls that were intercepted by through a target phone that was being utilized by the source.
And I just don't understand how him coming in late helps you on the probable cause argument when what the government has put forth is probable cause. You know, you're not really challenging, you know, the fact that there were phone records, that there was a cell phone and that kind of... But him coming late into the conspiracy doesn't help you on the PC, at least as I see it.
I think it's important in this respect is that all the other evidence in this lengthy affidavit, they use the same affidavit to search everybody's house in this case. An interesting practice. It's not an issue here, but they did. I think it's important in this respect, Your Honor, it segregates Mr. Walker's conduct, at least to a degree, from what went on before, because there's not even any evidence in the record that he had any knowledge of the scope of this conspiracy. His knowledge should be inferred by basically, I think it's the five or six telephone calls mm-hmm. that were intercepted. There's no evidence of prior dealing. There's no evidence of a drug criminal history. Nothing like that. And, of course, because his telephone was a cell phone, there's no information that any of these calls, any of these what appear to be anticipated drop-offs of drugs or a payment of money, ever occurred near the home. There was no surveillance of Mr. Walker in the record in this case at all that anybody else was seen coming or going to his home or that any of these transactions took place there. And if I could go back to the previous analogy I made, under all the circumstances, if merely a selected piece of evidence, such as potential phone records, can be the basis for a search warrant, we can all have our home searched because we got spoons in them. It's a common item. And the fact that they're commonly found in drug cases doesn't mean that that should be the linchpin on whether or not a search warrant should issue in the case. With respect to the staleness argument that we've made, there's approximately 18 or 19 days that pass from the last piece of sworn to information in the affidavit up until the issuance of the search warrant.
Well, again, the government has argued that, I mean, maybe you could make a staleness argument if the warrant had specifically said the methamphetamine was still going to be there, but all this other stuff, you know, the documents and records and firearms and currency and all, those things aren't as evanescent. They probably stay put at least for 19 days or 18 days.
Sure, but I think, Your Honor, there needs to be a distinction between allegations in the affidavit that are based on the common experience of the testifying agent as opposed to actual evidence. Our informant saw these records, for example. Our informant saw the scales. There's a difference between that as a level of certainty or a level of at least reasonable probability, which is the legal test, and some sort of empirical conclusory remark by the agents. Oh, well, we find this stuff a lot of times. Right. You know, when they want to search someplace that's not a home, we'll see representations in an affidavit. Drug dealers don't like to keep drugs at home. They like to keep them other places so they don't get caught with them at home. So this is not only a generalization. It is, I think, fairly to say, a generalization of convenience depending on the particular case. And the generalizations...
Okay, you're about to run out of time altogether if you want.
I'll conclude right
rebuttal.
Now. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Brockington.
Good morning. I think as the court hit it on the head earlier, this court has recognized that drug dealers typically keep evidence of drug trafficking where they live, things like
that. That proposition does worry me, starting exactly where Mr. McShane was ending. Maybe in this case, because you have the cell phone and you know it was registered to the place, there actually is a link. But I'm very disturbed at what you, the government's position appears to be, that all you have to do is say, we've presented evidence that Smith is a drug dealer, therefore we can search Smith's home. No other link at all. That, it appears to me that that's the argument you're making, and that seems to be a very broad proposition. Just put somebody on the, you know, execute an affidavit that says, yeah, you know, we often find stuff in the home.
I don't think the argument, I didn't intend to make such a broad argument in this case.
Well, how are you narrowing it then? What's narrower, apart from the cell phone records, in this case?
I think one of the things, when you look at the entirety of the affidavit, there are examples where other people in the conspiracy have used things like scales to weigh drugs. Mr. Walker's dealing with exact quantities of drugs, which would lead you to believe he's using a scale.
But
he's,
do we have evidence? I mean, I'm looking, you cited Supplemental Appendix 109. There's part four of this huge affidavit, which is called Characteristics of Residential Searches. And it's like a little law review article on residential searches, or a memoir of this affiant talking about what he often finds. But I don't see where this links up to any particular residence, certainly not not this defendant's residence. I mean, then he goes on and talks about various things that these people are involved in the conspiracy. We've got all these residences that go on.
Well, I think part of the rationale for including those paragraphs when determining whether probable cause exists to support a search warrant, we don't leave an affiant's experience outside the door. And I think an affiant is certainly allowed to suggest, and this court has recognized that an affiant's experience, what he's seen before in prior cases, what he's learned through his experience, is a relevant factor in
determining. No, I understand that, so, but I'm just saying, and I still don't understand what is the limiting principle you're using that would make your rule anything less than Smith is a drug dealer, therefore we can search Smith's house.
Well, I think there's a staleness argument that limits things, and there are also particularized facts in there. For instance, drug deals in August 26th and 30th, money collections, which would show that currency was being kept somewhere. Drug traffickers typically keep currency at their house.
Well, here you go again, typically. So again, so you're right. Saying anything within X number of days and you automatically get to search the house?
Well, I think that in this situation where there's ongoing drug trafficking activity, and it's recognized, again, I think based on experience, and when you can draw the link that somebody's been involved in drug trafficking, this court and the cases that I've cited in my brief have said that we recognize as a general proposition that drug traffickers are likely to keep this type of evidence at their homes.
But what about Mr. McShane's point, though, that only five paragraphs really cover his client, and all that other activity is not about his client in the affidavit?
It relates to his client because it shows an ongoing drug trafficking organization, which is one of the relevant factors that this court considers. But, yeah, I'm not purporting to say that all 100 pages of the affidavit relate to Mr. Walker. I'm saying that what's in there pertaining to Mr. Walker, especially when considered against all of the background materials, enough to justify.
In this case, you intercepted phone calls, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there any surveillance?
There was some surveillance on Mr. Walker. He was seen entering his house. As the court would recognize, looking at several pages of the affidavit, there were occasions where the conspirators detected surveillance, had expressed concerns about surveillance. So the surveillance was tailored to those facts.
But was he seen walking into his house in any kind of proximity to one of the drug transactions?
No, Your Honor.
And none of the intercepts, as I remember, includes any language like come to my house, you know, or some code word for that, for the deal.
That's correct.
So we don't have any evidence other than the fact that he lives there.
I think, though, if the court wants to require a specific connection and a specific surveillance observation to be required to get a document search warrant for this residence, it's got to overturn cases like Lehman and Redrick that I've cited in my brief.
Well, they have a lot of facts with them, but I'm looking, paragraph I on pages supplemental appendix 121, 122 makes it look to me like you really were relying on the fact that the cell phone was subscribed to him at that address, and Agent Robertson observes Walker drive from Buyoh's bar directly to that residence and go in. So that's what you put in.
Yes.
To the affidavit. You weren't, I mean, all the rest of this stuff, it seems to me, may be kind of theoretically interesting, but whatever we may have said in Lehman, to take the proposition that you search any, I guess you search all bank robbers' homes too, because maybe they put the proceeds there?
I don't think that's the case, and that's not my argument. But I think what the court has said before is when you have ongoing drug trafficking activity, and here we have situations where some of the intercepted calls, currency was obtained by Mr. Walker. That's the type of evidence that somebody typically keeps at their house. So there are specific facts that would show that specific types of evidence would
be. The search warrant was directed towards what? What were you authorized to search for?
The search warrant affidavit, what were we authorized to search for? Things other than drugs, documents, firearms, drug paraphernalia, that type of evidence.
But not drugs?
That's correct, Your Honor. If I can continue just going to the staleness argument, the informant statement that was cited in the affidavit indicates that the drug trafficking activity was going from July 2002 till July 2003, and he'd bought meth from Mr. Blair about 50 times. The affidavit doesn't say that Scott Walker came into the conspiracy at a late date. The affidavit indicates the wiretap started August 5th of 2003. 8 days later, there was a drug-related conversation where Frank Blair and Charles Judy are discussing ongoing difficulties that they've had with Mr. Walker relating to him drinking and dealing methamphetamine, having confrontations with different people. That evidence suggests that plus the code language that Mr. Walker used during his later conversations would indicate that he was involved in the conspiracy well before August of 2003, so that he was part of this ongoing drug trafficking organization for a significant period of time. As the district court indicated, the code language would indicate that he was not a novice, as the district court indicated. He was part of this ongoing conspiracy for a significant period of time. Furthermore, cases I've cited in the context of even a drug search warrant, the McNeese opinion that I cited said that where the most recent trafficking activity was less than a month before the application of the search warrant, there is no staleness issue where an ongoing cocaine conspiracy was involved. So I'd suggest staleness is not an issue. And lastly, I think the point we haven't discussed yet is the good faith argument. even if the court does...
I think we're going to have to rely on your brief for that, Mr. Blanken.
Thank you.
You have 1 minute.
The issue here is not whether there was sufficient evidence to connect Mr. Walker with this conspiracy. The issue is, was there probable cause to search his house in this case? And if the potential of finding a cell phone record, because he got picked up on a Title III wiretap on somebody else's cell phone, is enough, then I would respectfully suggest that general warrants are now the law of the land here. That's what the Fourth Amendment was designed to prevent. They don't have to be perfect, but they don't have to be certain, but they got to be specific, and they got to give rise to reasonable probability. The case of Mr. Blackington cited over the passage of time on staleness, the last event in that particular case appears to have been something that actually was proven to occur at the guy's house. There was nothing whatsoever in the record in this case to connect any activity that would be unlawful or lead to discovery of unlawful activity with this man's home. And Judge Tinder should have granted the motion to suppress.
Thank you, Mr. McCain. Thanks to both counsel in this case. We'll proceed to the fourth case this morning, Myrick versus Armorack.